Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's. You want to talk about a business that's built on customer service and trust. That's exactly what they've done. Integrity means everything at Purdy Insurance. That's why you want to be involved with them as your insurance agent. I don't care if it's personal, commercial, business, whatever it happens to be. They'll take great care of you, and they'll find the right insurance at the right price for you. And not only that, when there's a claim, they'll act as if it happened to them. They'll be on top of it immediately. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Long count, takes the snap, back to throw. Zips it over the middle, caught by Odell! He's racing across midfield, he's to the 40, breaks left to the 30, he's to the 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Giants, 66 yards! Oh baby, is he good!
Bob Papa on the Giants radio network with the call yesterday of Odell Beckham Jr.'s touchdown catch from Eli Manning. Then he promptly took off his helmet in the end zone and cost his team 15 yards. Look, you gotta maintain your poise. You know, I'm going to tell you a quick story about this. And this to me, was a story that is really concerning about what I've talked about the level that we're seeing right now mentally in the NFL, which is a real issue to me. All right? I know somebody who was a lead producer on the show Hard Knocks. And her and I were talking about 8-9 days ago. And she was telling me, I mean, she's won Emmys for this. I mean, so it's, you know, I think she's won 5 of them so far. She's on the sideline. And they're, you know, they got boom mics and things like that. You know, they're trying to get access. They're doing this with the Rams, so I'm not going to get into the players. And one player's there, they're sitting there, and all of a sudden they look up and go, "Oh, huh? What's the score? Oh, we're up 4. Really? I thought we were up 3. Huh. I got to get a better handle on, like, you know, what the lead is." Really? Really? Every person in the stadium knows what the margin is. All of them do. And for some reason, this happens over and over again. What don't you do on the field of play in the NFL, no matter how excited you get? You don't take your helmet off. It is a penalty. He makes a great play, and then he almost gives the Ravens a chance to win it. I mean, come on. It's like in the Georgia game. I talked about this a couple weeks ago. Freshman scores the touchdown, takes off his helmet. Hey, look at me, look at me, look at me. Yeah, look where the ball just went. The ball just moved 15 yards up the field.
And even the Odell Beckham Jr. Touchdown catch earlier in the game. He's out for a while, comes back in. Gets touchdown catch, and what he does, some kind of long jump routine in the end zone.
I mean, I don't mind. You know what? I don't mind the celebration part. I don't. In fact, I think the NFL has got to loosen the reins on the celebration part because it is an entertainment medium. Now, if there's a celebration that crosses the line, I thought the one dance that Antonio Brown did 2 weeks ago, that crossed the line. This is still family entertainment. And it's a rule you don't take the helmet off. Well, the reason you don't take the helmet off is they don't want you taking the helmet off anywhere in the field. Not just call attention to yourself, but, you know, it's still, I mean, you want to wear your helmet for practical reasons. But I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, these guys forget the entire concept of what's going on. I also think that the referees are too penalty happy in the NFL. Jeez, I mean, Ed Hockley gets more TV time than Trump. All right, we'll come back with to that in a moment. Let's bring in Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Matt, welcome. It is always great to hear from you, my friend.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. All right. It was a tough one yesterday for them. But you know what? Young football team that will get a lot out of it. What did you think about how it played out?
I think as much as people wanted to be positive about them being able to deal with the loss of Lane Johnson, I think people expected some problems on offense because not just are you losing one of your best, if not your best offensive player as far as a veteran's concerned in Johnson at the right tackle position, but you're replacing him with a rookie, you're going to expect some hiccups, some problems, and you definitely saw that. What was concerning to me was the defense was really not competitive for a lot of that game. And that's not it's probably an underrated Washington offensive line, but overall that unit, that's not an elite unit. And they went up and down the field and just dominated the line of scrimmage, dominated on third downs. Eagles, the game wasn't as close as the final score indicated because I think you had a couple of, I don't want to say fluke, but a couple of quick plays that turned it that gave the Eagles some life in the kickoff return and the interception return. But, I mean, other than that, down, I thought Washington really dominated.
What did you think of Wentz's play?
You know what? He was okay. I think it was honestly hard to get into a rhythm because somebody pointed out there was literally more than an hour that the Eagles' offense wasn't on the field. Between Washington having long drives and the Eagles scoring those touchdowns on sudden change and then the defense going right back out there. So it was hard for him to get into a rhythm. He was a little high when he missed high, which was kind of something you saw in training camp and in the little bit we saw in the preseason. When he's off high. But he was under duress almost from the first snap of the game, and it was hard to get into any rhythm. But that being said, he still had them in a position to maybe tie the game at the end, had the ball, and didn't turn it over again. So, you give him points for that. But I think he was, yesterday would kind of be an incomplete for me just because there were so many moving parts and he was on the field so little.
Right. Yeah, and that's an issue. What kind of job has Doug Peterson done in making plays as safe as possible for him and his growth?
Very good. I think yesterday was Doug Peterson's worst game as head coach. I think there was some Andy Reid-esque tendencies, and I don't mean that in a good way yesterday, where they had Vitae, the rookie tackle, and early on you would think Washington really struggles against the run, with a young offensive lineman, run blocked a lot easier than pass block. You would have thought maybe they would have really tried to grind Washington, and they came out throwing, and they had early sacks, and that led to quick drives, and that led to the defense being out on the field. He didn't put them in positions with low percentage throws, per se, but I thought, really for the first time this year, I thought the game plan and the play calling was out of whack.
Yeah, and that's, that'll happen in that setting sometimes. You're going to have 16 straight weeks of that. So when you look at where they are at this point, they've lost a couple of games now, first time that's happened. They've both been close. So what do you think of the football team? Is it the Lane Johnson thing too much at this moment for them to overcome and adjust to, or is it just going to take time there?
I think that's just going to take time. They've got to get the defense figured out because you can, even as well as Wentz has played, when you have a rookie quarterback and now a rookie tackle, you're going to have an up and down situation sometimes on offense, and you can deal with that if you don't turn the ball over, which they don't. But three of the last four halves now, first half against Detroit, and really both halves yesterday, the defense was just smacked around the field. Poor tackling. Washington's running game is not something. I don't think if you ask people name the top 10 running games in the NFL, I don't think Washington comes up on anyone's list. They rushed for 230, and that wasn't gimmick. That wasn't like a couple of reverses or jet sweeps or the quarterback had a big day on the ground. I mean, that was all just running back off tackle, play after play after play, and that's concerning because it is the polar opposite of what we saw early in the season, the first 3 weeks, where the defense, as well as Wentz played, the defense was at times dominant. You know, you look at what they did against the Steelers that game,
right,
and they've gone complete 180 in the course of a bye week in two games. So there is some ebb and flow of a season, and you'll have these ups and downs, you know. But that's, for me right now, as much as they've got to get the right tackle situation figured out, I'm actually even more concerned about the defense, because I think that's a bigger deal to the success overall.
When you have a young team like this, did the timing of the bye week being so early actually hurt them?
I think not so much the timing in a vacuum of week four. I don't think anybody likes an early bye. Right. But I just think it coming after the 3-0 start.
Yeah.
I think they were really playing well. It was clicking. And they just haven't been the same since the bye. I mean, Detroit, you know, if Ryan Matthews doesn't fumble, they probably still find a way to win, and that right. probably changes the narrative of Washington. And even if they lose yesterday, well, they're 4-1, they were due.
Right.
I just think the idea that they were playing so well and coming off that Steelers game was probably the organization's best performance since halfway through Chip Kelly's first year. So, you know, it's not so much week four as it was the fact that they were peaking at that point, and then it just kind of stopped.
The Eagles traded Sam Bradford. He did not freely leave. How do you think the greeting shall be at the link?
I think there'll be some boos. I think there'll be a smattering of applause.
Yeah.
You know, I was joking with some people at the station, like, you know, what do you think the Sam Bradford return video will be like in the game, you know? The highlight of that touchdown he threw down 30 to Arizona. yeah, but he was fine. I think people got a little irritated at where he sat out the optional workout because he was upset about them going and getting Wentz, and
yeah.
But he really didn't miss anything, and he said all the right things leaving, and they got a first-round pick, and frankly, 98% of the fan base, and rightly so, would rather have Wentz doing this than Bradford, so
right.
It probably worked out for everyone, and based on nothing, and despite what I've said the last 7 minutes or so, I think the Eagles find a way Sunday, just because that's how the NFL works.
Yeah, right. And that is how the NFL works. I mean, it's amazing how the NFL works at this point. Are you surprised at all by what Bradford's done out of Minnesota?
No, because I think Bradford's a good quarterback. Yeah. I thought last year, Sam Bradford, if you really take a step back and examine, he has had one of the oddest careers in NFL history as far as a starting quarterback is concerned. When you consider he went to a terrible franchise, you throw in the injury situation. Then he comes to Philadelphia. Can he stay healthy? Can he stay healthy? Well, yes, he can stay healthy, but he's playing in what turns out to be really one of the worst gimmick offenses we've seen with Chip Kelly. And then, as soon as he's ready to get into a more quote-unquote mainstream offense, he gets traded 8 days before the season.
Right.
And if you look, he went to the perfect situation in Minnesota. You know, it was a veteran team that's looking to win now. They had a running game with Adrian Peterson. He's actually had to shoulder more of the load since then. But a dominant defense. They don't ask him to do too much, but he is capable of doing more if needed. And he goes into a fan base, into a city that welcomes him with open arms, because he's not looked at as the guy who's off injured or the guy who they traded a second-round pick for or anything like that. He's looked at as the guy who can save our season after Bridgewater got hurt.
Right, exactly. You mentioned defensively how there was disappointment about how they played. Outside of Fletcher Cox, give me a guy that game in and game out you feel they can count on. Because Cox is obviously that guy, but who else besides him?
For the most part, even though he had a tough day yesterday, Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah.
He did have the interception return for a touchdown, but he missed some tackles. A lot of the problems they had on some third downs looked like, and you don't know this unless you know the scheme and watch the tape and all.
Right.
But just watching the eye test in real time, it looked like he was trailing a lot of guys. But I would say Malcolm Jenkins is a guy. And then, you know, you've got a lot of guys that have been kind of up and down so far. You like Jordan Hicks a lot. He's been solid this year, the second-year linebacker. But one of the things where he really jumped on the scene last year is he made big plays. He made momentum plays. We haven't seen any of those as of late. Nolan Carroll's been okay at the corner. They've kind of been a hodgepodge to the other corner because of the injury to Leotis McKelvin. But, you know, Connor Barwin has struggled. Michael Kendricks has really struggled. Benny Logan got hurt yesterday. So there's a lot of questions on that side of the ball.
You mentioned Doug Peterson as the Howie coach. What's the responsibility of Frank Reich? He technically has the title of offensive coordinator. So what are his responsibilities?
I think I've always been kind of curious because this is the same type of situation that Andy Reid had with Brad Childress for the most part.
Right.
Where I think it would seem that a lot of Reich's responsibilities are during the week, you know, helping to put the game plan, helping to devise the game plan. And I think he probably has input into what he's seeing and play calling to a point, but it's Peterson that makes the play call and is the guy sending it in. Everything funnels through him. So, you know, it's hard to say, but I've always been curious about those situations because they're cropping up more and more where head coaches call the plays, but they still have an offensive coordinator because it seems like he's not quite the offensive coordinator. He's not really coordinating the offense, but I'm old school that way.
Right. Yeah, I see guys and they go, oh, okay, well, that title means you have more money. Compared to somebody else, but I was wondering what his responsibilities were because obviously Bill O'Brien took over the Texans play calling from George Gottsie, and you're like, okay, what does that mean George Gottsie's doing now? So, Matt, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Great to hear from you, man.
Always great to be heard. Thank you, sir.
Matt Lee on KYW Philadelphia. Back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. I've had a few people say to me, says, there might be a record crowd in Beaver Stadium. And the record, by the way, is 110,753 for that Nebraska game in 2002. You can't get that crowd in there. You can't. Let's start with this. First of all, there are approximately 1,000 fewer seats in the stadium compared to that night. When they had to do they had to take out the bottom three rows to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act, the attendance in Beaver Stadium, the official seat capacity went from 107.5 down to 106.5 or something like that. I don't know. So, no. Nigel Hayes had a sign at game day that read, broke college athlete, anything helps, and he had a hashtag. Now, I understand where he's coming from. I'm going to get into more of this when we're done with Donnie Collins, but he's campaigned for this for a long time. There's no doubt. Look, Nigel Hayes will play some form of pro basketball. It's just not going to be in the NBA. He's 6'6", 6'7". He's a tweener. He will play in either Europe or the D League. He's an excellent college player, but he's not an NBA player. Just the way it is.
I see this all the time. Does the Wisconsin Athletic Department generate a lot of money? Well, yeah, starting next year. In fact, each school in the Big Ten is going to get about $40 million a year from the new TV contract. I mean, all of them, Penn State, Wisconsin, all of them. And Under Armour just put together a deal of $10 million per year with them for jerseys and things like that. So, I mean, they've got a lot of money. Their operating budget last year was $122 million. And the operating budget of Wisconsin Athletics actually is higher than the city of Green Bay. It's true. Barry Alvarez, the AD, gets $1.1 million. Paul Chris, the head football coach, $2.3 million. Greg Gard, the men's basketball coach, $1.75 million. In fact, the school, which is hurting a bit, okay, because of state budget cuts, state funding, the athletic department actually gave the university $11.5 million to help out. So he's saying, where's my cash? Here's the problem he's got. Okay? If he's holding the sign, and people know who he is, and he's doing it peacefully and he's making his point, that's fine. I understand that completely. But if you're a parent walking by and you see that, and you've paid a tuition payment in August and have another one due in December, what is your sympathy level at that point for him? If you're a student who's been taking out student loans, the vast majority, by the way, do, that will owe money when you're done, as opposed to the zero he will owe. I mean, he won't owe anything when he leaves. What's your sympathy for him? There isn't any. You don't have any sympathy for him. You don't have sympathy as a parent because you're paying your share. You don't have sympathy as a student because you're taking out student loans. And he's got a debt-free education to go with a stipend and free meals. You're not going to generate a lot of juice from the populace.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Donnie Collins in a few moments. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. And, you know, they find you the right insurance, best price, and the if something happens to you, they go after, they attack it right away. They want to make sure that your claim is taken care of and you get exactly what you deserve. That's the insurance agency you want to be with, Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. All right, time now for the sports bozo of the day. Okay. This actually is with hypersensitive officials. Urban Meyer today talked about a 15-yard penalty that was called against him for sideline interference in the second quarter of the game the other night. And he made a comment about it today because he did talk to Bill Carollo. And what happened was the official running down the sideline hit Urban Meyer. But he, I mean, did he really hit him? Not much. And he said he was talking to his wife, Shelly, and he said that she said, did you get hit in the face on the sideline? And he said, what are you talking about? He said, he barely grazed my headset. He got a 15-yard penalty for that. Now, look, I realize you're supposed to create a lane, But just warn the coach at that point. If you run into them and it impedes them, okay. But if you go by and you graze them, you know, you got to have some common sense in this game. And that's what's bothering me a little bit about a lot of what I'm seeing now in football is the lack of common sense that I'm seeing sometimes in the players. I was telling you the story in the previous hour about the two players on the sideline for the Rams, like trying to figure out what the score was and go, oh, we're up by four. Really? You know what? Yeah, I got to do a better job of putting that together as to where we are. There are 90,000 people in the stadium. Okay, you're playing in the game. You don't know it's a four-point game? Really? Really? The same thing with this. You're officiating the game. Okay, you graze by a guy. I mean, like, graze by him. He didn't hit him. He grazed by him. They call a 15-yard penalty. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, Ohio State never gets called for penalties. Well, that's not true. Ohio State actually has been called for a lot of penalties this year. A lot. They have a young team, and young teams make more mistakes. Well, they've been called for a lot. And after a while, it's like, just keep the flow of the game going. Stop with the ticky-tack stuff. I get frustrated watching some of this sometimes because I think it's a great game that right now is being... I don't know. I see stuff like that, and I'm like, oh, and I'm not sitting here trying to defend Urban Meyer, but for goodness sakes. You know, after a while, I mean, common sense has got to enter into the thing. Oh, well. Okay, let's get to Donnie Collins. Donnie, Scranton Times Tribune, welcome back, my friend. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Steve.
Last 2 weeks, Ohio State, it takes a lot to get through certain games and to win them. They had a tough one with Indiana, won it. Had a tough one on Saturday night, won it. What do you see in that football team right now?
Young players. I mean, they aren't very consistent in game at times. But they're so talented that, you know, they could beat a team like Wisconsin that played, you know, great first half. And yeah, you know, and the other thing they have, and I think as great as JT Barrett is, I think he kind of gets underrated because, you know, nobody ever really looks at him and says, I mean, that's just a great player who is carrying that team. I think he is. He makes every big play down the stretch. He's the guy that you really have to worry about. And, you could have a young team that's talented, and I think Penn State has that in a way too. And you know, once your quarterback starts making plays, though, it's a big deal, and you're just a much better outfit because of that. You know, Penn State isn't at Ohio State's level, I don't think. And some of the reason for that is JT Barrett. But you see some similarities there with McSorley. You're kind of coming into his own the last couple of weeks for Penn State, and Barrett starting to put that team on his shoulders. I think he's the difference for them.
Well, yeah, there are a couple things about that. Well, number one, you can see the youth is the number of penalties they've committed. People don't realize how many penalties that Ohio State's committed this year, and that's obviously a youth thing. But when it comes to experience, right, they're not inexperienced in the key spots: quarterback, center, middle linebacker, shutdown corner. They have, in key spots, veterans who have played.
Oh, yeah. They're you say in baseball, when you're good up the middle, you're good.
Yep.
Ohio State's good up the middle. You know, they're good even in the middle of the defensive line. When you lose Joey Bosa, that's a big deal. You lose some receivers there. But they're just replacing them, and they're getting better. But you're right. I mean, where their experience is where you want to be experienced. So they're a quarterback, and the linebackers are good, and they do have some shutdown type of guys at corner, and their safeties I think are really good. But that's the thing with that. Yeah, you're right. The penalties are very surprising considering that they are Ohio State, and this is the Big Ten, and they can go weeks without being overly penalized in the Big Ten, and traditionally have, but this is a team that does get They make useful mistakes at key times in games. But that said, they're so gifted that they can overcome them.
Yeah, I mean, and Barrett is obviously the key to all of that when you look at how they play. They go into a big-time atmosphere at Wisconsin on Saturday night. They're going to go into a big-time atmosphere here. You know, having him at the helm, what does that mean in big-time atmospheres as to how coolly he handles that deal?
Yeah, he's a big difference. I mean, or you know, with you know, I mean, he's quarterback. So you're talking about Barrett, right?
Oh yeah, I'm talking about the tailback playing quarterback. Yes.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, with Barrett, he's played in so many big games. He's played in when he was young. Played in them. Yeah. You know, last year he overtakes a guy who won a national championship for them, honestly, and Cardale Jones. He comes out and just plays better than him. And, you know, now it's his team. He's comfortable. He's confident. You know, this is, you know, he's a big time player. He, oh. You know, you don't think of him as a thrower, but he makes every throw. You don't think of him as, you know, as a speedy runner, but he gives you that fullback kind of option. Like you have to watch him. So he's just a fun guy to watch. I think he's best player in the Big Ten. Yeah, for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you can argue any number of guys, but I would think J.P. Barrett.
Yeah, I mean, I thought last year if Cardale Jones stayed in the game, Penn State's chances grew exponentially with each possession. The second he came in the game, I looked at Jack in a commercial break, and I said, "Game on, the guy's in now."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just thought he was that good.
Yeah, he was. That's the funny thing, you know, and you're almost embarrassed to bring it up as a reporter watching the game, because I mean that's Urban Meyer coaching them. He's maybe the best coach in the country, and obviously J.P. Barrett was better for that offense than Cardale Jones. And yeah, I remember that, having the same feeling that game really turned that game was going to turn whenever they put Barrett in, because at that point it was clear he was going to play a little bit. And, you know, he came in, really took over, and Ohio State cruised from the time he came in. But yeah, as good as Cardale Jones is, and he's in the NFL, I mean, look, Barrett's just a better player at this level and for that team.
What needs to happen on Saturday night to make this a true puncher's chance in the fourth quarter, in your opinion?
Defense has to play. Defense has to make a play. I mean, a turnover. You have to get a, you know, something like that where the offense is starting at the, you know, the 20, the Ohio State 20, and you punch one in, and you get a free score off of that. But you know, that's something that has to happen. I think John Reed has to make a play on special teams. Something like that. But you know, the thing that really. I think it really comes down to something more basic. Trace McSorley has to make plays. He can't turn the ball over. He has to do it the way he's done it the last couple of weeks. Take care of the football. Barkley's gonna, you know, he's gonna have himself the kind of game he's gonna be able to have, because, you know, they're gonna be so focused on stopping him that you know, if he can get 100 yards, we'll get 100 yards. But if he can get 40, that's what he's gonna get. So I think it's gonna come down to. So how many plays can McSorley make? And if McSorley can make enough plays to kind of take Ohio State's defensive focus, because they're so well schooled.
Yeah.
You know, if they could take the defensive focus away from Barkley a little bit, make the offense, you know, and it's something basic to say, you know, because that would work against anybody. But
right.
You know, in a game like this where you want to keep it close, you want to have the puncher's chance in the fourth quarter, because the crowd does make a big difference for Penn. Penn State's a much better team at home than they are on the road. I mean, everybody is better at home than on the road, it seems, but Penn State certainly is a team that's much better at home. You know, and if that's a close game in the fourth quarter, anything could happen, but you know, they're going to have to play a perfect game is what it comes down to. They're going to have to get plays where they, maybe even points where they don't normally get points. So, yeah, I don't think they could play it, you know, the way they've played any other game this year that they've won, and expect to beat Ohio State. But you know, if they make a play on special teams, make a play on defense that changes things, I think they have a shot to keep it close. I don't see it happening, but I could definitely see it coming down to that.
What do you see now with the how interested are you going to see how the offensive line plays out with Andrew Nelson out?
yeah, that's going to be a big, something big to look at because, I mean, obviously, we don't even know which way they're going to go officially with that. Nelson's the kind of guy that, yeah, I'm not. He's not Anthony Munoz, but he's a guy who is easily the most stable player on that line. You know, he's a guy you don't have to worry about, and everybody else is kind of coming into their own around him. And to lose him now, you're going to a backup player at some level. Could you know who is it? I mean, I would think that Paris Palmer is going to be in the conversation, and I would think that if he plays, he's going to be on the left side, which is going to give you essentially a different tackle at each position. Without Nelson, that's a big loss. He's the Naeem Wortman of the offense. The guy you really can't lose without having to change a whole heck of a lot. So, you know, Tennessee's going to have to overcome, and they've overcome so often on defense this year that I think it's the offense's turn to have to overcome some adversity. But it's going to be difficult because Nelson's the guy you can't lose. And expect to be the same.
In 2 weeks, Donnie, in the last 2 weeks, where's Penn State a better football team now than they were in September?
Oh, the quarterback's better. I think McSorley has made big leaps. They're a good football team now because he's not turning it over. Mm-hmm. So just because he's not fumbling as much, not throwing as many interceptions, I think that makes them better. I think the offensive line playing with some confidence makes them better. Obviously, everyone knew that would be the case, but they made a pretty sizable jump after the Michigan game. Now the competition might say, that jump should have happened, but whether it should have happened or not, they are playing with some confidence now. And I think that I don't know if this makes them a better football team, but I'll say it. I think that the fans can kind of see the future a little bit, so there's a little bit more support there, I think, for what they're doing,
right,
in the sense that you're seeing some of the younger guys. Cam Brown's a good example. Well, they probably wouldn't have played Cam Brown this year if they didn't have to, mm-hmm, but it turned out they had to, and hey, well, look, the guy's playing pretty well, so if you have some patience with these guys and you're not expecting them to be Paul Posluszny and Dan Connor as soon as they take the field,
right,
you might see some positives, and I think that's kind of extended to the whole team because they've had to play so many of these young guys. So I think they're a more supported team right now. I think their quarterback is playing better. I think they're blocking better. And, whether you're a supported team or not, when your quarterback is playing better and your offensive line is blocking better, you're going to be a better team every time.
Okay, no question. Donnie, thanks. Appreciate the time. As always, great to hear from you.
Yeah, same here, Steve.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us. The big game coming up on Saturday night, Beaver Stadium. Whiteout. And it'll be it is Fowler, by the way, Herb Street and Sam Ponder working the game on TV, by the way. So they'll be here.
Yeah, Herbie's first trip into Beaver Stadium since the Iowa primetime game 2009. Obviously for Fowler and Herbie, their first game together working in Beaver Stadium.
Yep. Fowler called this place home, I think, for 4 years.
Sure did.
I went to Park Forest Middle School here, and then his father, who was a professor, then took a job at Colorado, and then that really was his home. He went to high school there. He graduated from there, and, I think also went to Colorado, University of Colorado. So it's always been, Boulder's always been his place. But at one point, State College was home. So they'll be here. And that's the TV crew for Saturday night. No, big week. They're going to let the students move into Nittanyville tonight. They'll be camping there all week. It's a good week to do it. It's going to be in the 70s during the day. It's going to be, temperature's not going to get cold here until late in the week. Now, whether or not it rains or not, I don't know. I don't have a dartboard. Might shower a little bit. We'll see. I don't know. There is a pep rally on Friday night. There's a lot going on. Big 12 for the moment not going to expand. They made that announcement today. They're still trying to.
So after all that talk and speculation we did in the spring, trying to think, who could come on board?
Well, I didn't think they should expand. I'm sitting there like, it makes no sense. But they're a league that's in trouble. Make no bones about it.
That's,
they're vulnerable.
I mean, the longer the list of colleges, we pull down a list of, 10, 12 schools, and if really one didn't really stick out, yeah, you're right. I mean, just stay where you're at.
I think here's the danger line for the Big 12. The danger line is 2024-2025, okay? And the reason is that's when the grant of rights runs out. And that will make them free agents. And I don't think they'll be in 2026, I don't think they'll be a Big 12. If you really follow this thing in the business of it, that's a big one. That grant of rights is what's kept this thing together. Now, ironically, you know who does not have a grant of rights? Is the SEC. The SEC does not have a grant of rights on the TV where it's signed over to the conference. So if you left, your money would still go to the current conference. That's what grant of rights means. And so you come out of that, and you look, once that thing runs out, you know, Oklahoma and Texas, they're not going to sit there and re-up on a grant of rights. There's no way. Now, Oklahoma has a problem. And part of their problem is Stillwater. This is where politics gets involved and intertwined. If Oklahoma goes someplace, there are going to be people in the state of Oklahoma say you got to take Oklahoma State with you. That's a problem. And why do you think Virginia Tech's in the ACC? Oh, come on. Virginia wanted to vote no on them getting in until they were told by Richmond, no. I know it's hard to believe that politics enters into it. College football ratings, Ohio State, Wisconsin at a 5.6 overnight. Alabama, Tennessee, a 4.1. Another big win for the Big Ten in prime time.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.